Good evening, everyone, and welcome to ET Healing and Explorations in Consciousness. This is Jackie Salvitti and my fabulous co-host, Veronica Entwistle.
Good evening, everybody. Hi, Jackie.
Hi, Ronnie. Well, we have a great show tonight. The shadow continues healing betrayal and competition to embrace the divine feminine and masculine.
Betrayal and competition, that's a conversation.
Yes, it is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we can throw in jealousy, abandonment, you know, some of the other little goodies that come with this. Mm-hmm. Tonight's dedication, and I want to talk about a story that was on the news this week. And actually, it was a client that brought it to my attention. And it was a recall of, it was some astronomical number of bees. It was like 141 million pounds.
I saw this piece. It was horrible.
Okay. And I did not see it on television, thank heaven. Mm-hmm. My son did. And they actually had filmed this slaughterhouse and the abuse and torture of these cattle.
Yeah,
now, you know, I'm sorry, everybody, because I normally don't talk about things of this nature on the show. But I really want to dedicate this show tonight to the elimination of cruelty to animals on the planet and the energetic support for all of those animals who are offering themselves up so that humans will get the message. Because, I mean, everywhere. I mean, I'm seeing this everywhere with animals. You know, we saw it with this football player who was, you know, using the dogs to fight and, you know, I mean, it's everywhere. This discussion I've had all week long with people, and, you know, I think this one, you know, Bill Maher on HBO talks. He, you know, consistently talks about the fact that the reason that our country is in such big trouble physically is it's in the meat. And in my own research, you know, I'm going back 20 years ago, a little more than 20 years ago, calves had stapled into their ear as a calf a thing that would administer hormones into the calf from the time it was a calf for its weight gain.
Hmm.
Now, of course, they're using hormones and steroids. But, you know, I don't know for anybody who's – I'm very energy sensitive, and Veronica, I know you are.
Mm-hmm.
And my biggest concern with beef has been years ago I was a vegetarian, and – I had this craving for a Big Mac, and I finally couldn't stand it anymore, and I went down and bought one. And the minute I took a bite out of it, I could feel the fear in the meat. And it was repulsive to me. This story I really see as a huge wake-up call. You know, I think a lot of people will put it in the denial bin, but that's what I see happening right now, is that these messages are coming at us in big ways. And for the amount of steroids and hormones that we're ingesting through, you know, not especially our meats, but, you know, everything. I mean, at this point, the way we eat is really important, but it's really about the animals. So that's our dedication for tonight. I know that humans are suffering as well, but this one really hit me hard. I want to talk about also the eclipse, which we had last night, which I'm assuming all my clients I've talked to today got to see it.
We saw it. It was beautiful.
It was absolutely stunningly beautiful. Mm-hmm. And I don't know about you, but everyone around me slept yesterday. You know, it was amazing that people... I talked to another client tonight that almost went home from work because they couldn't stay awake. How did it affect you, Ronnie?
I felt actually very good, although I am going through a lot of, like, emotional dumping kinds of feelings. But I felt really good, and I slept very well last night.
Good for you. Well, like you, I'm dealing with some familial stuff right now, you know, where it's all coming, you know, to a head.
Mm-hmm.
And this is really old stuff. I mean, really old stuff that's triggering real old feelings that need to be healed. But I what I noticed this morning was this sense of well-being I woke up with.
Mm.
And the sessions, it was reflected in the sessions today, which I thought was really beautiful. The sessions were incredibly powerful and incredibly loving. And very, very deep. And so I always look at the sessions as kind of my monitor for what's going on.
Hmm.
And I really got the sensing today that things had moved to a whole new level and that the team is really trying to touch people at a much deeper level, a more, it's almost as though, how would I put this? They're wanting to be intimate. And moving in to wanting to touch you, and it's for me, from what I gathered from this was that, you know, there, it's like we moved through another boundary that would allow them to come in even closer.
Mm.
And perhaps that we opened enough to be able to allow it in. So I found that very, very beautiful. I have to share one email I got today. The other thing I wanted to bring up too, dramatic disclosures, lots of chaos, familial chaos, the resignation of Castro, which I thought was really interesting. There was also a disclosure about the having to do with the Kennedy assassination, and that thing came up on the news, only because my son heard it, because I don't listen to the news. And it is not even searchable on any of the news sites.
Oh, wow, you mean it popped up and then disappeared? Because I caught that it was coming up, but I didn't hear the rest.
You BBC? Didn't catch that it was coming up on the news and then didn't hear it?
Bob said BBC.
Oh, thank you, Bob.
But yeah, that was really interesting because I just caught a wisp of it, and I also don't track the news, but Bob does.
Oh, I thought Bob was saying something.
No.
Okay. Anyway, here's a brief statement from somebody I received this morning. It says, I'm feeling today as if I'm not in 3D. In my conversations with people, I hear what they're saying, and yet it feels like a yada, yada, yada moment. It is mostly about the dramas of their lives, and I'm the neutral listener. It feels weird and amazing at the same time to be so even-keeled. I have a sense of floating, and I feel energy running down my head and face all the time now. I wonder what others think about me. Do they sense a different me? Is it obvious, or are they only glad someone is hearing without reacting to their problems? It's so surreal.
Mm-hmm.
This was from Squirrel, of course, so, you know, it was a wonderful statement about there was a definite shift. I can tell you, I could feel it. When I walked tonight, I walked with my son this morning. When I walked tonight, I was by myself, and I could really feel it, the difference in the energy. So mm-hmm. I'm loving it. Another opportunity for us to shift, everybody. Mm-hmm. Let's get into tonight's show. And this show, everyone, started with a conversation that Veronica and I had on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
And we got into this subject in a very deep way, and I said to her, this feels like a show to me. I had a list of other shows here, but and then it starts showing up in the sessions this week, and I went, okay, fine, I surrender.
Mm-hmm.
They seem to deliver it in ways that I can't miss because they know I'm a little slow. If they don't make it real obvious, I'll miss it. So tonight, again, healing betrayal and competition to embrace the divine masculine and feminine. What this is really about is embracing, from my perspective, the Empress, the High Priestess, the Goddess, and the Hierophant, or Emperor God. And, you know, So what stands in the way of our really being able to embrace these energies? And this is really the deep stuff, you know, betrayal, competition, jealousy, abandonment.
And they're all life and death.
Yeah, they are.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this is really our human drama that we're dealing with here. This is the ultimate human drama. We've been playing it out since the beginning of time on this planet. You know, maybe not in Lemuria. You know, Atlantis, maybe a little at the end. Certainly at the end. For women, you know, in our conversation, Ronnie, you and I were talking about the fact that this whole issue of, and you have this session, which also was kind of the impetus, of women not being able to trust other women.
Right.
And, you know, this really goes back to, and we talked about this last week, to the burning years.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it goes certainly beyond that, but that imprint is so deep in the collective. And for any of you who are listening tonight that don't know what that's about, this really was about a time 15th, 16th, 17th century. There were 5 million people tortured and killed. Basically, the doctors, which is a god projection, and the Catholic Church, another god projection, got together, and the doctors didn't like the fact that the women were being midwives and herbalists and healers and intuitives. And so they implemented, of course, they made them witches and whatever, and the church designed a confession that they made the women sign, that stated they had had sex with the devil, and of course it took all this torturing to get them there. Actually, they tortured them 3 times, which is where the expression "the third time's a charm" came from. What grew out of that also is that women who had an axe to grind with other women were turning their friends in out of jealousy, competition, whatever.
Or just even self-protection.
Some of it was self-protection, yes, but a lot of times it opened the door, of course, if you had a petty jealousy with another woman, what better way to get rid of them than to, you know, infer that they were a witch or doing, you know, an herbalist or a psychic. Women were not the only ones killed. Men were as well. But this is a huge imprint in the collective.
Mm-hmm.
And it really twisted our, you know, not that it wasn't already there, but, you know, it just made our issues with God and with men and with other women even deeper.
It was big in the Egyptian days, too.
Yeah, absolutely. And so this has gone on. I mean, when we lost the goddess on this planet, we lost the sisterhood. There was a time on our planet where women, when the goddess was here, when women were self-honoring, when they did ritual, even during the time of Christ, you know, there was, in the Essenes, there was a total honoring of women and still following in the tradition of Isis. And, you know, we have lost all of that, where this whole, as the whole balance shifted, where women lost their power and men became the dominant. And Veronica, you and I were talking about this, where women had to compete for a man.
Right. And still do, actually, at times.
Oh, yes. And still do.
And in those days, more than now, it was your whole life. It was your support, your where you were going to live, whether you could afford to live, to be with a man, to be with your husband.
Well, you know, this is it's really built into the system when we become a human. we drop down into our density, that we're all convinced we're not going to forget who the hell we are.
Right.
And of course we do. And we go through this because here, the only place there is, trust me, folks, that we experience ourselves as separate from our source, separate from God, Goddess, all that is, separate from the infinite, from the source of all the names that you want to use. And from that point, and Lord knows I've talked about this enough, we project God onto Dad and Goddess onto Mother, and that, of course, creates the familial chain of pain, because from there we then project God onto the men in our lives and Goddess onto the women in our lives and continue on this whole abandonment betrayal dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, so as humans, you know, being separate, we continue on over and over and over, you know, ad nauseum with this same, with this same problem.
And it takes up a huge amount of our drive, our subconscious, doesn't it?
Oh, it's absolutely enormous.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely enormous. And it is the human drama played out over and over, and it's continual. This is why, you know, I've talked about the familial chain of pain. Our goal in this lifetime is to end that chain, and it is the ultimate challenge.
And a lot of our exciting gossipy news is all about that stuff, too, isn't it? That's where people get the juice and the excitement and the passion and the...
Oh, my God.
And the story. So it's fuel. We're fueling our subconscious all the time. Or the shadow.
Well, oh, absolutely. With the Brad Pitt, you know, Jennifer Aniston and Angelina Jolie thing, if I hear about that one more time, I will just...
You know, the thing with me is I developed huge opinions about it. I never read a whole article, just the front of magazine.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's very funny. That's very funny. So when we talk about embracing and embodying the divine masculine and feminine, you know, I don't think most people really think about what that means. And if they don't have a sense of self-worth and value, and their value isn't strong, first of all, they're not going to believe that they can do it. And that's what we're about right now. All of these openings that we're going through, this whole ascension process, is about embodying the divine masculine and feminine. And we can't even conjure up a concept of the divine masculine and feminine as long as we're embattled with the abandonment issues with God and Goddess.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, from my perspective, kind of the crux, you know, played out then in the family dynamic. And I know you've run into this, Veronica. How many women have you met that grew up in a family that their feminine was not honored? They were made to feel homely, incompetent, useless. Oh, Lord, I can go on and
me.
On and on. I'm sorry?
Me.
Okay. And, you know, my mother did the same thing to me as well.
Mm-hmm. I have a number of women friends that had that experience, actually. Mostly because the mothers felt were really sort of toxic and broken about their own femininity, usually. And it was a competitive thing.
Yes. I would agree. Well, and again, this is the continuation of the chain of pain.
Mm-hmm.
They project it out onto their children and continue on their dynamic that's been unhealed. We also have the other piece of this is the thousands of years of men controlling women.
Mm-hmm.
And our distancing and anger, you know, which again I've talked about so much, healing the relationship with God. And boy, this is a big order. Because again, in the collective, not only do we have the burning years, and, you know, thousands of years of religion dominated by the masculine, but we have all of the wars and all of, you know, the crusades and all of the suffering, all in the name of God.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that sits in the collective as well. And I, you know, I again, I don't know how many of your clients, but I can tell you, and I think you were at that intensive where we did, at least I think they did, there was a meditation on healing the relationship with God, which I know went, I had people laying on the floor sobbing. It was a really big issue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the goddess, although people do have issues with the goddess, but the goddess to me is, I always said, you know, Lazarus got to do the goddess, you know. We came along and have to do God. It just isn't fair. You know? And an interesting story for those of you that are aware of Lazarus, when Lazarus tried to bring forward a relationship with, a real relationship with God at one point, his people got upset.
Oh, really?
Yes. They absolutely, there was still such angst with God, the goddess they could embrace, but not God.
Hmm.
And I thought that that was very, very interesting.
Yeah, because God in the old days was such a punitive character, wasn't he?
Well, portrayed as such, yes.
I remember I was about 5, and I remember saying to the clouds, you know, God, you're a bit stupid. Some of the people you hire are nasty, and I know you're great, but, boy, you're really mixed up. I used to talk to him, you know. Because I thought he knew better, but he was really being quite poorly judged, you know, and mean.
Well, again, you know, this is a thank you religion. Well, and we also have, you know, again, thousands of years of men controlling and fearing women.
Mm-hmm.
You know, after the loss of the goddess on our planet and the suppression of the feminine out of fear of that power, okay, and then the perpetuation of that with the story of Adam and Eve, the seductress who created the fall of man and original sin, you know, which also sits in the collective.
It was very original.
And of course, this whole concept of woman being created from the rib of man, okay?
Hmm.
You know, women have been cast into the role of the lesser, the subservient. So women come in with this built-in anger at God. And, you know, men have a different situation generally in their relationship with God, but they have this distancing from the goddess. So and I see this in couples where the woman is playing out her anger at God with her husband and the man is playing out his anger with the goddess with his wife, for those that are, you know, really are working with God and goddess.
Hmm.
I found that one very, very interesting. Anyway, you know, the anger at God that sits in the collective from all these years of abuse in the name of God, we're just screwed. You know, I just look at it and I go, we're screwed. I mean, we have to really... And then we anchor it in through the projection of God and goddess onto our parents, and then onto the men and women, and then onto our doctors and priests and ministers and rabbis, anybody in authority, and presidents.
Insurance adjusters.
I'm sorry?
I said insurance adjusters.
Yes. Uh-huh. Well, anyone in authority, IRS, you name it. Anything in authority, okay, you know, there is some of that projection there. You know, an interesting thing, I happened to pick up something on the Mormon Church this week, and or maybe it was last week, and it was... with the death of the president of the church, and they did an old interview on him, and of course I spent 13 years in Utah, so they were talking about, and they were because he really never held interviews, but they were talking about the priesthood, and he actually got very upset. He didn't like the line of questioning at all, and of course the Mormon Church, only the men can hold the priesthood. And not the women. And of course,
what was the line of questioning? Was it challenging that?
It's just these basic questions, you know. Well, you only this, and you know, you allow that, and he just got very upset about them even questioning anything, and especially about the role of women within the Mormon Church, and the fact that women could not get to the celestial kingdom unless they were sealed to a man. So many men are sealed to many women when they actually cross over. And those women cannot get to the celestial kingdom. If you don't have a husband, you're not getting in.
Hmm. They go to limbo.
Well, this is why in the temple they actually go back and seal their relatives to other men, even after they've been deceased.
Wow.
And this is one of the reasons that their archives in terms of their genealogy is so great, because they go back to their entire genealogy to make sure all of their relatives get to the celestial kingdom.
Hmm.
And so they do it in absentia.
Hmm. So they keep track of who's sealed to who to make sure everybody's ready to go.
Absolutely. Hmm. And the Mormon Church is huge. This is not a small church for people that don't realize this, but it fascinates me how entrenched this is. And, you know, they were talking about how God and Jesus appeared to, it wasn't Joseph Smith, it was whoever, anyway, and, you know, told them that this was the way it was all to be done. And, of course, they do a lot of advertising now on the television. And their real hook in terms of getting people to join the church is to be sealed and to be with their family forever.
Hmm.
So much for
power retrievals, eh?
Yeah, really. Well, and then we get into this whole new archetype, and this is what, and you and I talked about this, Veronica.
Mm-hmm.
This new archetype is, and it's actually moved into the collective, you know, the framework, the blueprint of human consciousness, which is the empowered feminine, who then wants to dominate the masculine out of a backlash of having been dominated for thousands of years.
This is what it is to be successful, and then they act it out, right?
Right. And, well, and it's, I see it more as a backlash of not only the success issue, but, and becoming competitive with their partners or spouses, but also the domination. I always see it as the feminine with her foot on a man, you know, standing there with a sword in her hand and her foot standing on her mate,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Yeah. The conqueress.
That's exactly it. It's mm-hmm. the conqueress. And which is not the divine feminine. So, you know, we end up with a whole new archetype that rather, and who becomes competitive with her mate, proving that she is more, proving her value. And I've seen that. Have you run into that in sessions, Veronica?
Oh, yes, I have a lot, actually. And a lot of what I'm conscious of while you're talking is a lot of underlying fears, both of the other, that they're not actually acknowledging. So that's where the competition comes from, isn't it?
And how do you see that?
How do I see it? Usually they get more and more distant with each other. I think it just builds up. It's different with all kinds of people. But how I see it is imprints in the belly and how they're pushing each other at some level with a lot of, well, I sort of see it with, it brings up a lot of jealousies and so on. And I also see that usually one partner doesn't really know what's going on.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. So, you know, we're back to this whole controlling and dominating, or dominating masculine or feminine. You know, this is, but until we heal our relationships with mom and dad and God and the goddess, we're not going to be able to embrace the true masculine and feminine. We can't do it because we're going to reject it at some level. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's the same old thing where we tow each other around subconsciously if we don't clear those imprints.
Oh. Well, and it can even play out with our children.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we can then turn around and project mom and dad onto our children. And I've seen this one over and over again, you know, a lot of times where the wife gets a divorce from the father and makes the son her husband.
Right, I've seen that a lot.
Yes. And I see this more with, although I've seen it with men doing it also with their daughters.
Mm-hmm.
And then they are totally screwed up. because then the son becomes the head of the family, and as soon as mom starts to date someone, the son then feels competitive because he feels that he's the man of the house, and now you have a whole other dynamic. And certainly lots of people out there have encountered this one. Now we have to look at our relationships with men and women in our lives and how they look. So this is one that I'm finding to be really fascinating in terms of friendships, male and female friendships, and how those dynamics, what those dynamics are. I mean, I would recommend that you all look at this in your own lives. What kind of friends do you have today? Do you have a loving, non-competitive relationship with them? Or have you projected mother or father on them in some way? Now, you know, this is one of my favorite stories. I'm the perfect person, so are you, Veronica, to come out of the totally dysfunctional family, okay, where I was abandoned and rejected by mother and abandoned by father. So I continued, I projected dad onto every damn man I ever met, and projected mother onto a lot of my female friends. Now that did not, that's absolutely a recipe for total disaster.
And so you would expect the woman friend to be really like mean like your mom and come here, go away and all that?
Ultimately that would happen. And ultimately the same thing would happen with the men. In terms of my relationship with dad, because he abandoned, and he never, you know, he used to say when my ship comes in, well, you know, it became almost my mantra, you know, it was almost a joke, you know, that if I met someone, they were going to lose everything. You could just count on it. Or they were chasing some unbelievable dream that was, you know, an impossibility. And of course, I would hop on the bandwagon of, you know, here I am I'm gonna do for them what I couldn't do for dad.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna make them successful, and I would, but keeping them there was the challenge.
You might be grateful that you didn't keep them there. Hey?
Well, you know, ultimately they end up resenting you. You know, I've talked about this before, that you can elevate someone far beyond their own levels of what they believe that their own value is. They know ultimately that you're the force pushing it. They're going to end up resenting you anyway.
Right.
So, you know, here we go with these same projections and how destructive they can be. And then ultimately you're going to end up with, you know, competition, jealousy, you know, all of the classic problems. And until I stopped projecting and actually came to that point of neutrality where I could allow my friends to be exactly who they are, and I always talk about this, I have friends that could give a rip about what I do. I mean, they know it, they love me, they think, you know, okay, you know, it's real for her, that's great, but they're just my friends.
Right.
And
they're long-term friends.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
So how did you get to the point that you were no longer projecting and you knew it? Big question.
No, I have to stop and think about that. I no longer tried to earn approval. I could be totally who I am and know that they love me regardless. I can remember one of my friends said to me one day, this is before I started this work, We used to walk together every morning. And she called me a drama queen, and that used to just infuriate me anyway. And I looked at her that day, and I said, you know what? I love my drama queen. This is where my drama queen is the person that isn't afraid to step out there with the truth. It's the drama queen that will drive me forward when it's time to do whatever I'm here to do. Of course, I didn't know what that was.
You're speaking intuitively at the time.
Evidently, I was. Because, you know, if you're a pussycat, you're not going to step out, you know, on that edge saying I'm working with, you know, ETs and, you know, all these beings, and I could never have done it. But I'll never forget that day of embracing that and being able to have fun with it and not taking it personally, not feeling hurt or slighted, and realizing, and I had a wonderful friend who we could have arguments about things.
Mm, that's good.
And she would get mad about something, and I would confront her, and she'd say, oh, I'm sorry. You know, because she'd say I did something wrong, and then I'd say, well, you did this. And so, and it was over. Boom. There was nothing, you know,
she didn't
nothing
leave
after
any
that.
Stuff hidden in the dark, in the shadow.
Absolutely nothing in the shadow.
Mm.
And so I have friends like that today, that, and they're, of course, I have those same friends, but where if, in fact, they feel that I wasn't there for them, if there was an issue or whatever, and, you know, all of our friends certainly have gone through a lot of stuff in these last, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been a lot of working out of a lot of stuff for a lot of people on this planet. This has not been an easy track. But, and I have another friend who is a long-term friend that I had projected mother on, and I today, and we're still friends, I am so clear that that projection is not there at all.
Wonderful.
And we have a totally different relationship, completely different. But I could actually sit down and pinpoint who I had projected that onto, and once those projections were gone, some of those friends fell away because the relationship, you know, the idealization was no longer there.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't idealize them, and therefore the relationship didn't work for them. And that was okay. That doesn't mean I love them any less. It just means that for them it may not have been comfortable any longer. And, of course, same thing with men. I don't want a father. I got very clear about that one. And you certainly you see this in your work, don't you, Veronica?
I sure do. I mean, about the father, about the projection?
Oh, absolutely.
I'm still spinning with the projection and what all that was, you know. Because I always want to say about myself is I used to have this limerick I loved, which was when I was walking up a stair, I met a man who wasn't there. He wasn't there again today. I wish the man would go away. And when I was involved with my second husband, I went, I wish I'd never said that limerick because my father was basically wonderful, but he was not there. And that I just continued with that little projection or that process until I really got it.
And what happened to your second husband?
I left him.
Oh.
But it wasn't just because of that. It's because I had to, he was very, very depressed, and I couldn't do it anymore. So I just finally pulled away, and then I went really into a huge self-search kind of thing. But recognizing those things and laughing at the naivety with which I had repeated what I thought were funny little rhymes that I was living out, you know. It was incredible. So I think that was part of that projection of kind of taking a familiar image and reliving it over and over.
Well, we do. This is imprinted in us anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I'm always fascinated by the fact that we will attract to us, especially in men, a lot of times, you know, I did. The men that were very deep for me were the ones that reminded me the most of my father.
Yeah, it's kind of scary, isn't it, when you think it's really deep and passionate. I want to say something about what you were saying, which is about you have a couple of friends that you can actually talk about an issue and then clear it up and it doesn't go anywhere. And I think that's something that I have found really hard to find. You know, but I think that's one of the most recommendable things, isn't it? To get yourself out of the projections as well.
Real friendships, you know, I'm a firm believer in this, are about accepting each other totally as you are. And this is the divine masculine, the divine feminine. The divine feminine, you know, the high priestess, the empress, is unconditionally loving. It doesn't mean they don't have boundaries. They do. But the high priestess definitely has boundaries. the Empress, you know, is loving everything, and the High Priestess then moves in, you know, has stronger boundaries and tends to be more of the observer. And I think that we, you know, this is the divine feminine is both.
I think of the Empress as being, you know, one of the images is about being pregnant, or I think of her as just full and rich because of the inner process that goes on when we keep learning and learning and transforming past something. You know, she's in that process always, isn't she?
Always pregnant, yes.
Yeah. Her babies are creative projects.
Well, and it's not just with babies. It's with ideas and with emotion and with all kinds of things.
Right.
It's a constant process of creation, and recreation.
Well, I'm jumping in right now and saying, well, those projections that we placed of the goddess on our mothers, for example, when I think of the Empress, I think, well, then there's hope because these can change. These can be in gestation as far as creating a higher form of it.
That's absolutely true. Using our mothers as a model any longer for the divine feminine doesn't work. Using our fathers as a model for the divine masculine doesn't work. If you've healed those relationships, I say this to everybody listening, if you've gone through the power retrievals to where you have come to total peace and love with mom and dad, you could do it, but your relationship with them will no longer be with just them, this human in this lifetime. It will be with the totality of them and all of your lifetimes with them, because you will then know them in an intimate level, and you will feel all your lifetimes with them. You will feel them on a totally different way. I mean, I've seen this over and over again with the people that we've gone all the way through these very deep power retrievals with. And as these other lifetimes come in and this deep, deep, deep clearing, and all of a sudden your relationship then takes on a totally different dynamic. And
then all their friendships, all people's friendships change at that time too, do they?
They
not?
Do. They absolutely do. I think because of the work, my love of my friends has become much deeper, and also more patient. Allowing people to be exactly where they are till they're ready to be. I don't feel the need to fix anybody, which is really interesting. And it's been a real paradox for me, for the work I do, to be with these people when it would be so easy for me to say, well, you need to do this, and if you let me do that, and if you come in here, I don't even go there.
Good for you.
I enjoy them for who they are. And it's been a real interesting paradox. So
when we're holding judgments and we're feeling that kind of prickly judgment with people, we aren't able to let them be who they are.
No. We want to fix them or criticize them.
Mm-hmm.
Or in order to feel like we're more, certainly make them less. Use them as that stepping stone to feed our need to have value. And this is what we do because we're humans, not because we're bad or because we're wrong. And then our ability to celebrate everybody's win. You know, I have clients, you know, I look at this and I'm thinking, well, this one's, you know, written the book, and this one's, you know, with the billionaire, and this one's this, and this one's that. And I'm like, brava. You know, I'm so excited to see people accelerate in their journey and have these wonderful, amazing things happen for them, because I absolutely know that this is not about me not getting what I want, or, you know, me not having value or enough value to have what they have. I've become very clear that we can create anything and everything in our lives.
So when we're judgmental and critical and so on, it's actually just competition.
It's competition and fear that we're not enough, that we won't get it,
mm-hmm.
or that we won't get what it is we really want. It's really interesting to me that I I can go to people's homes and they can be magnificent and this and that and whatever, and I think it's fabulous, you know, and I come home and look at my own home and I go, no, I love what I have. I love where I am. You know, would it be nice to have this or to have that? Yeah, I guess. You know, do I have it today? No. Could I have it in the future? Of course. You know, am I focusing my energy on that? No. I will look at the bigger dynamics. I just assume whatever I need is going to be there when I need it. And it's not that I limit myself. It's just that I'm in, at the moment, I happen to be pregnant. There you go.
You don't even have to create a nursery. Good for you.
No. No. So, going back to, you know, this whole relationship with God and Goddess and the divine masculine and feminine, embracing, you know, I always am concerned that people will reject the divine feminine and the divine masculine. And the divine masculine is the one, I mean, this was in somebody's intentions, and I love this. I intend to experience the anchoring of the new masculine lunar energy from the galactic center, bringing in gentle, loving, and supportive energies, creating the new economic and social structures for the Earth. What a great intention.
That is wonderful.
I love that. And this came from a woman.
Great.
Now, that to me is the most whole, healthy intention for embracing the masculine. You know, because the masculine is the manifester, the one that brings it out into the world. The woman is the gestator, the birther.
Mm-hmm.
But we need both. We absolutely need both, and we need to heal that relationship. And when we're in process doing that, then the competition, the jealousy, isn't there. The ability to, you know, I mean, part of my job is to help anchor in people's intentions.
Mm-hmm.
I'm real clear because I'm the physical vehicle. So I'm the human guinea pig. That's what I always call myself. And I always assume that I'm well taken care of because I just figure they need me. I just consider it job security. But I got very clear that one of the big things that I do is help anchor intentions into the physical realm. And I can feel it happening during a session. It's like being a transformer, of kind of transforming those intentions in. And that's why from the very beginning, everyone was required to write intentions for their session. You know, I always say to people, God, you know, really beef up your intentions. You know, this is an opportunity to anchor in what you really desire. And I think a lot of people are afraid to do that for fear of being disappointed that they don't get what they want. You know, we're so trained on that one.
Mm-hmm. Trained to be judged at some level, too.
Oh, and, you know, that's just so the opposite. If we're here now to embrace and actually embody God and Goddess within us, we always have had it. We're a spark. We are God, Goddess, all that is, experiencing itself as a human being on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
If, let's go in theory here, if that's true, which we know it is, then sky's the limit. The only thing holding us back is us. And our relationship, our belief that that's what we're doing. And every time we deny anything to ourselves, anything, it's like denying it to the Creator.
So actually, to work on our healing our relationship with God, for example, you can work on just your partner or just a friend upon whom you're projecting, right?
Oh, absolutely. And I would say look at your friendships, because if you've got any that are really iffy, okay, have you projected onto them? That's what the first thing you want to look at. And the second thing is, do you really like them? Why are they your friend?
You know, that's a very difficult question to answer sometimes, isn't it?
Yes.
And some of it's just sticky energy from gosh knows what lifetime or whatever.
And it can be, but, you know, I happen to have, you know, very unique friends. And some of them, you know, it makes me giggle, you know, that some of them can be difficult. And yet, ultimately, they're wonderful beings. They're just having a tough time this lifetime. And
are you always clear as to why you like certain people or what it is you like?
You know, I have I hear the feedback back from them, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Because of you, I'm learning to be kinder or nicer. I'm learning this or I'm learning that. I don't try to teach them. It's by an example thing, believe me. You know, if I pontificated, I'd be out the door. Nobody'd want to be around me. I do enough of that. Nobody wants to hear it.
Mm-hmm.
And for those, you know, I have one that can be difficult at times, but they have incredible loyalty and love, and they're quality people, and they make me giggle because, you know, they're in their own right amazing beings, you know, anchoring huge light and doing bigger things in the dream state, not fully conscious of who they really are yet, and that's okay. And, you know, would I not be friends with them because I don't think they're elevated enough? No. No, not at all. It also helps me to be in touch with the world. So, and I love them. I mean, they're incredibly loving and loyal, you know. And they're quirky, and that's, I find that incredibly entertaining.
There's no two beings alike, so it's
there
pretty
are
interesting
no
out
two
there. Be-
and, you know, mm-hmm. Each one has, every soul has their beauty, and I tend to see their beauty. You know, if they were a first-class pain in the butt, no, it'd be different. But, you know, are they there and, you know, doing things and, I mean, just, you know, wonderfully caring and, you know, some can be crotchety, whatever, that's all right. That doesn't bother me. I mean, if I had a need to fix them, it would bother me.
But let's go back to the original theme of this show, which is they don't appear to be betraying you or competing with you.
Absolutely not.
Yeah. So that's no. Something that you've dealt with.
Absolutely down. Not. Absolutely not. Totally loyal, completely there. And all my friends are that way. And because of that, you know, I got very clear that I would never have a relationship with a, you know, a lover unless it could be like my friends, because I think my friends are so wonderful. Each one very unique and different.
Mm-hmm.
But for everybody out there in this, you know, again, embracing the divine masculine and feminine is our job now. It really is. It's where we're going. This is the energy that we're in right now. It's letting in that love of ourselves, of really recognizing that in ourselves. All the stuff we've been told is a lie, everybody. It's a lie. Trust me on this. That you're not enough. You know, I hear this from people, you know, if they've been told they will never amount to anything, that they're not enough, they're not pretty enough. And, of course, I live in a town where this is the center of plastic surgery here in Los Angeles. And I, you know, I have friends that talk about their plastic surgery and this and the makeup, and then it's very funny, and I love it. It makes me giggle. And so I get to hear all of the different ways that people are looking at things, and I think that being enough is everybody is there. You have it. You have it all.
So to deal with betrayal and all that is dealing with that, right? Being enough.
Absolutely. I know there's a question brewing in you, Veronica. What is it?
Well, I'm just thinking that sometimes there are a lot of fears, and people have been kicked around a lot,
yeah.
And they have their deep subconscious, their shadow-like fear of betrayal and competition, and I'm just trying to make sure people have tools to release that.
Again, it goes back to mom and dad.
Mm-hmm.
Because any relationship they have after that still goes back to mom and dad.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Any partner, you know, male or female, whatever it may be, still goes back to mom and dad.
I'm on it. I'm going to do that.
Yeah, every single time it goes back to mom and dad. That's where we start. That's our role. That's our blueprint.
That's right.
And so everything after that is projection. I mean, the human consciousness, the familial chain of pain was designed this way. You start out with mom and dad, and you project it all the way out until you die.
Right.
And continue on with your children. It's just a continual chain.
We're trying to move ourselves out of that collective.
That's the goal. Something brilliant, and I want to do a show on this. It was about watching every thought. This is channel material, but this is came through beings on the other side of the veil. Long story behind this. Watch your thoughts. Stay very vigilant with your thoughts, your emotions, and your words. Each one carries a vibration. It is your responsibility to recognize and shift the energy signature that you are offering to the collective. This is far more important than you realize.
Wonderful.
I think it's brilliant. Mm-hmm. Veronica, tell them about your show. I hear last week was fabulous.
Oh, it was very exciting. But guess who's on next week? Is Galexis.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, Paradigm Shifters, 5 o'clock Tuesdays. Galexis, who is a team of consciousness or a collective group of consciousness and channeled through Ginger Mitro. And they're going to channel on the...
Brilliant, everyone. Brilliant.
It's going to be wonderfully fun. And my own show is at 4 o'clock. It's Radiance by Design. It's a call-in show. We talk about you and your questions and shifting your energy so we can all do what Jackie's talking about and release Mother, Father, God, get out of the familial chain of pain and have some fun. So tune in, and we're going to have you on one of these weeks.
Yes, we will, I promise.
Yeah.
Your website, Veronica Entwistle,
.com. No H in Entwistle.
And ours, of course, ET Healing. We love you, everyone. Remember, a piece of each and every one of you is in Veronica and I, and a piece of Veronica and I are in each and every one of you. It cannot be any other way. We are all one. We love you so much. Thank you for tuning in, and thank you for going on this journey with us. And Ronnie, I love you.
I love you too,
as always, honey.
Take care. Have a wonderful evening, everyone. Good night.
Hello, my name is Ian, and I want to invite you to visit Ian's Place every Sunday at 8 p.m. At Ian's Place, we have the most powerful conversations on talk radio. If you want to start living your life your way, then Ian's Place is the place for you. We are going to cut to the chase and have a lot of fun doing it. So grab a cup of coffee, get comfortable, and tune into Ian's Place. And discover simple techniques that gives you the ability to customize your life your way. That's Ian's Place at bbsradio.com, station number 2, every Sunday at 8 p.m.
Hi, this is Robert Lee Kemp, the host of the Mr. Destiny Radio Show here on bbsradio.com. Tune in Monday nights on the late night section at 7:30 Pacific and 10:30 Eastern. I want to invite you to come and listen in or participate in our lively and informative shows. Would you like to know something about your special destiny? How about your personal relationships or your finances? Are you thinking of moving but not sure when or if you should? Did you just meet somebody and want to know whether or not you are compatible? Would you like to know when you will meet somebody new or have more business success